Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 106. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we are back after a little mini hiatus.
Yeah, it was kind of an unplanned one, but yeah, life happens.
Not intentional, but I think we've both been trying harder to not push things and not overwhelm ourselves. Because, you know, we do this for fun. And I wanted to stay fun. Yeah. And I was very stressed out because I was on a book deadline. I really had to finish my book. And you just started a new job.
Yeah, and training for that was kind of stressful. And I'm still new. But it was kind of a chaotic weekend.
Yeah, and then I went home for Halloween because my mom had a birthday and she retired, and we threw a Halloween party for her, and it was amazing and so much fun, but also we drove there, and that's like 7.5 hours each way, so it was just super busy, and I was like, Kristen, should we just put this off for another week?
Let's just take a mini break, and we'll be back, and it'll all be fine.
Yeah. So that's why we've been a little silent, but things are calming down. My book is officially turned in. I'm going to be starting on the next one soon, but hopefully that will be a little less chaotic, and then you're going to keep working, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll just get back into the groove.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you would like to contact us for any reason, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We have 2 weeks worth of news to get caught up on, but there's really not as much as I thought there was going to be because a lot of it is TV news, which we're still not talking about, and we will give you another update on the strikes here in a minute. But what I want to kick this off with is Rick's October 17th blog post, which has caused a stir in the fandom, and rightly so, I think. He basically wrote his thoughts on what's happening in Gaza, along with his time at New York Comic Con and some self-promotional stuff. And I thought this was strange right from the beginning because I never saw him or Becky tweet it out or put it anywhere to promote the actual blog post. I only saw it because other people had started talking about it, and then I went to his blog and read it. And then he deleted it, or somebody deleted it. I assume he deleted it. We don't know why exactly. It could have been because of the criticism he got. Disney could have pressured him into deleting it.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. And then it was re-uploaded. It's back on his site now, which I was actually really surprised by. I went looking on his blog today because he posted another blog, and I just went and looked just to be sure, and it was there, and I was actually really surprised by that. But a lot of people have rightly been criticizing him for talking about Gaza and his thoughts on it, and then transitioning into the self-promotion.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite sit right with me either. And I think along with that, just the not, like, promoting it at all. You know, if he wrote something about it, then he obviously has opinions on it and is standing by it. And yet nobody on his team was really talking about it.
Yeah.
So I found that all kind of strange, and I know a lot of people have been talking about the blog post and how they feel about it and about his sort of neutral stance and all of that, and it's a lot to get into, but we thought it was really important to bring up the blog post and kind of, you know, what was surrounding that and how people are feeling about it. And we also, first of all, there is a lot of misinformation going on right now with everything going on with Gaza. So make sure that if you are doing research, we've both been doing our research and trying to put in the work to learn what's going on in the history of everything that's led up to this. And just know that there is a lot of information out there, and you really need to verify your information from multiple reputable sources, because it is very confusing and there's just a lot of contradiction going on all around when it comes to this sort of thing.
And it's not easy to figure out what's propaganda and what's, you know, what's a first-hand source. You know, you see videos that feel real and that someone's telling you what they saw, but you can't 100% trust that. It's very hard. So yeah, just be very mindful that there is a lot of misinformation out there, and you need to, you know, look for multiple sources and know where you're getting it from, and
yeah,
and really just, you know, do your best to see the real events and see what's really happening.
Right, exactly. I also really wanted to mention a few of the authors in our little circle that have been talking about this a lot, which I've really been appreciating because I feel like I've been learning a lot, especially from Taylor K. Mejia, who has been posting a lot on Instagram about this. And then Daniel Jose Older and Sarawat Chadha have been posting a lot as well on Twitter. And Daniel wrote a really beautiful, I think, piece about where he kind of stands on all this, and he's Jewish, and, you know, where he's coming from with all of this and standing with Palestine and just how heartbreaking everything is. And Sarawat has always been very critical of his government and their participation in these sort of things and all of that. So if you're looking for some people who I believe that you can trust to have, you know, done their own research and have opinions that I think are critical and important.
Valuable.
Yes. I think those three are very, very good to follow if you aren't already. I also wanted to mention that Mark Oshiro is raising funds, and there is, I believe it's an auction that's going on. Yeah, he tweets, "I'll repost this once the auction is live, but I'm repeating what I said on Instagram. I wanted to donate something special and unique to this fundraiser. I am totally serious. I will fly to any school in the U.S. or Canada and do a full day school visit for you." And this is for Books for Palestine, which you can follow on Twitter at books_Palestine. And the post here says, "Mark Sherrill will visit your school for a whole day, giving multiple presentations to the whole school-wide, individual classes, and or small clubs." The auction is from Tuesday, November 7th to Saturday, November 11th at 11:59 p.m. EST. And there's extended bidding as well. I'm not 100% sure what that means, but
yeah,
I read it because it was in the tweet.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a very good thing to keep an eye on if you're interested in donating to that, or if you know anybody who could really benefit from a school visit, because Mark has a lot of incredible things to talk about, a lot of life experience, that I think that he can share with kids everywhere. And obviously it goes to a very good cause.
Absolutely.
I also found a tweet thread of a list of Palestinian journalists on the ground in Gaza. Somebody basically listed out their names and their handles, and if you want to go follow them for the Palestinian perspective on the ground in Gaza, I think that would be very important. I'm also going to include donation links to Save the Children and Doctors Without Borders, along with the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. I've been seeing those charities going around quite a bit, and they are really doing as much as they possibly can at this point, which unfortunately is not a ton, but
yeah,
they're trying, and I've seen that donations have just skyrocketed over the last, you know, week or so. So hopefully if you can spare any money to donate to those, I think that would be really, really important to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, this is something that Seaweed Brain Podcast posted on Twitter that I thought was really important to share, which is Five Calls. I've never used this before, but It basically helps give you a script when you're calling your representatives.
Okay.
So if you don't really know what to say or you're nervous, it makes things a little bit easier. And they have a lot of different, like, abortion rights and, you know, anti-transgender legislation. Like, they have a lot of stuff on here that you can go off of. But they also have one for de-escalation and ceasefire in Israel and occupied Palestine. And you can basically, whoever your representatives are, you can call them, leave a voicemail, or if you do end up talking to somebody, like, it'll just basically tell you what to say. And it says here, too, if leaving voicemail, please leave your full street address to ensure your call is tallied. So they need to know that you live
in the district.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'll provide links to all of that in the show notes.
Also worth noting, I am terrible at phone calls, and they scare me. But I was able to find both of my congresspeople, but both of my senators especially at the time. I was able to find their email addresses on their official sites and reached out to them that way. And one of them actually gave me a response back and said, like, thank you for reaching out. We value blah, 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 blah. So if calling really terrifies you and you can't do it, there are ways to reach out to your representatives. I would look on their individual websites. You can Google it. It'll probably be one of the first 5 results.
Yeah.
If you know their name, or, you know, just look at a list, you can find your district and go from there. So, just very important to reach out and, you know, do what we can.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the emails as well. So, yeah, thank you for that. So Rick also posted a second blog post on October 23rd, and this one was strictly about Rick Riordan Presents, and he mentioned the books that are currently out, which is Fury of the Dragon Goddess by Sarwat Chadha, that is the follow-up to City of the Plague God, The Spirit Glass, which is Roshni Chokshi's Filipino book that is a standalone, at least as far as we know right now, Sarah Boateng's Guide to Witchcraft and Mayhem by Roseanne A. Brown, that is the second Sarwat book, Dawn of the Jaguar, which is the second and final book in the duology, The Shadow Bruja series, which is a spin-off of the Stormrunner series by J.C. Cervantes, and then Foxsnare, which is the final book in the Thousand Worlds series by Yoon-Ha Lee.
I feel like clapping for you.
Thank you.
Congratulations for getting all of that out and correct.
I wrote down all the titles for the books, but then I was like, I'm going to test myself live on air and see if I can remember what they're all from.
And we have episodes for 4 of those 5, which I'm really impressed by us.
Yes, yeah. So you can always go back and listen to our discussions once you end up getting to them. It is a lot, but that's the good thing about podcasts is you can always go back and listen when you've read the book. The blog post also mentions A Drop of Venom by Sajni Patel, which comes out January 16th, so that is the next Rick Riordan Presents book that will come out. And then Winston Chu versus the Wingmeisters by Stacy Lee comes out on February 6th. That's the second Winston Chu book, and we're both very excited for that one.
And probably the last, right?
I think it's meant to be a duology, yes.
Yeah. Which is sad, but also sad. Exciting because we're looking forward to the book.
Yeah. And then It Waits in the Forest by Sarah Das comes out on May 14th.
And that's the one that looks scary.
Yes, but sounds amazing.
It does sound really good, though. I don't know. We'll see.
Those are the next 3 books, so we're only getting 3 between January and May. I feel like that's a little surprising. Maybe because this year, like, it was just, there was a lot of books packed in, plus Rick writing books and...
Well, and so many of them, I think, were series enders. Like, you had... Gracie Kim's was the last book in the series, as well as Daniel's.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, like, there have been a lot of last books, which I think it just makes way for new series and new authors, and maybe some of the old authors will come back, like Roshni, who keeps finding ways to stay in RRP, which I love. So, yeah, like, it's kind of funny that I think we just ended so many series that it felt like there was just so many books. And, I mean, we just read a list of 4 or 5 that came out in the last, like, month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a lot of books. So, yeah, it looks like next year is going to be a little less packed, which will be nice because we'll still have books to cover, but it won't be quite so often.
Right. And right here we have 2 new authors with 2 new books coming out. So I'm really, I mean, not only... because it's just fun to get new authors in the mix, but those particular books are, like, at the top of my list. I'm very excited for them.
And who knows what will be coming after May. Like,
right.
August and September could be packed again because, I mean, September was insane this year for RRP, so
yeah.
You never know how the end of the year is going to shake out.
And especially, I'm a little surprised because I'm pretty sure the second Pahua book was supposed to come out at the end of this year, and then I haven't really heard anything about it, so I wonder if the deadline just got pushed back and they're waiting for the final copy to kind of tell us when it's actually coming out. So there probably will be more announcements. I'll be interested to see if they'll be in the first half of the year or if they'll end up kind of sticking out in the later half. But don't forget that pre-ordering really, really helps authors. If you're interested in any of these stories, go ahead and pre-order them wherever you get your books, whether it's through indie retailers or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or something like that. That's really, really huge for everybody, and I know that they really appreciate it.
Karen would know.
Yes, I would know. And while you're at it, if you want to pre-order my books, that's also fine with me. I have one coming out, hopefully, in December. And then, after that, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. Ree Riordan was also a little bit busy over the last couple of weeks. They put out 3 articles. The first one was Catch Up with Zyanya, who is from Dawn of the Jaguar. Again, I did not read this article because we have not read this series. The second one was Meet Admiral Beck, who is from Foxsnare. That was the admiral that shows up at the end of Foxsnare. Pretty interesting. I remember you saying that you thought he was a pretty interesting character.
Yeah.
And so they've got an article for that. And then the last one is Ree Riordan, How to Get into Camp Half-Blood for Non-Demigods. This article, I feel like the thought behind it was cute, but it was basically like, I mean, you're not going to get into it. Like, you can try sneaking in, but it's going to be super dangerous. And also, like, can you bribe a dragon? Because that's a big thing.
Right.
And all these other ways to try to sneak in and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was a little silly, but I didn't mind reading it. So if you think that sounds interesting, I will put a link to that in the show notes. But honestly, the thing that I'm most excited to talk about is Gracie Kim announced her next book, which will come out mid-2025. It's called Dreamslinger. And if you listened to our interview with her back when we were talking about the Gifted Clan series, then you'll remember she talked about this book and she was kind of still working on the idea a little bit. And it sounds like she's got it solidified now.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing. And I just want to note that this is still a Disney Hyperion book, but it's not Rick Riordan Presents.
So Karen and I are going to be in a real pickle trying to decide whether we're going to cover it or not. Because we like kind of keeping it to RRP books, but since Gracie is an RRP author, we may make an exception.
Yeah, I mean, we were really, really excited about this one. There will definitely be a review of it on Subjectify Media, and we'll definitely mention it when it is coming up. If the podcast still exists in 2025.
Right, I mean, who
knows? Which I hope it does.
We certainly are hoping and planning, but you just never know.
But, yeah, so I want to read the description from, I believe it was the Publisher's Weekly, a little blurb for it. X-Men meets Pokemon. This series starter tells the story of a 14-year-old who was born with a genetic mutation that turns her dreams into real-life superpowers. Her fight to find her place in the world and in her family leads her to the Royal League of Dreamslingers, but in order to be accepted as one of them, she must survive a fierce and dangerous competition that puts her powers to the ultimate test. I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
It really does.
And, like, Dreamslingers. Ooh.
It's a good word. It's a good title. It's a good series name. Like, yeah, it's fantastic.
Now, this specifically said that this was sold in a 2-book deal, but since it says series starter, I wonder if it's going to be more than that.
Like, I wonder if they initially made the 2-book deal just to solidify that it will be one more than one book.
Right.
And that they'll just go back in to deal for 3 through 4, 5, 6, 7, 10.
Depending on how many she wants to write. And then, you know, also probably how it does as well. So.
Very true.
Yeah. I'm very interested in it, though. I will be first in line. I told Gracie Kim that. And I'm not going back on my word because it sounds really, really amazing.
Yeah.
The last part of the news section is Kristen's Corner, and we have a little bit to catch up on here.
Yes, we do.
Some important events went down.
We basically have 2 episodes of Survivor to talk about, so I'm going to talk about the first one first, obviously. that makes logical sense. In the episode from 2 weeks ago that we have not talked about yet, we saw Jay kind of get the first opportunity to really play. She got, like, her first real camera time on the show. Which, I mean, we had seen her get some, do a few of her little, like, diary sessions all by herself. And we had seen her in the group stuff, but we hadn't really gotten to see her do a lot of play. Which I'm sure she was up to, but they can't show everything on the show. They edit down so much of what goes on there that I'm sure there was a whole lot more going on than we got to see. But in that episode, we saw her on her tribe, which was basically Reba minus the 2 boys, and then we added Sean, and we saw her basically pushing to get rid of Sifu, who just didn't feel trustworthy to her. And I think she had a really good point, because Sifu, in his, like, diary sessions, which of course they don't get to see, was constantly talking about getting an idol and being, you know, at the merge and going off on his own.
He was a physical threat and all of that.
So, like, I totally understood why she thought he was not going to be an asset once the merge came around. And in all of this, there was a vote when Sean left, and they all voted their own way, or what, you know, they all, it kind of became chaos at Tribal Council, because Sean basically said, send me home, and that was not the plan, and so then they all kind of scrambled.
Everything.
Yeah. So then they all kind of scrambled, and Jay and Julie both voted Sean out, as well as Sifu, I believe. And so there were 3 votes against Sean. There was 1 against Dee, which we know came from Sean. And then there was 1 vote for Sifu. And Jay should not have gotten herself involved.
Yeah.
I think she felt a little responsible, since she's the one who wanted Sifu to go and she changed her vote at Tribal Council. I think she felt the slightest bit responsible for Dee's vote. And I think that's why she kind of fell on the sword and said that she was the one who voted for him. But it basically started a whole thing and put a whole thing in motion that snowballed out of her control. And it really, really makes me sad. Like, Sifu very quickly saw her as the enemy. Right. And, like, wanted her out badly and was ready when, I mean, we went into the merge in the next episode. So, like, he starts really pushing to get rid of her. And that wouldn't have happened if she hadn't kind of fallen on the sword for Dee. Mm-hmm. So it really just breaks my heart that she did that for Dee, and then Dee kind of stabbed her in the back and was like, we can get rid of her.
Yeah.
Broke my heart. Also, it has to be noted, there was a special thing where Jay got to go on, like, a little outing, and basically it was getting to know 2 other people. It was Kelly and Austin, and there was a choice at the end of the outing between this advantage or a sandwich, and I don't think Jay thought it through.
Yeah.
Because the stipulations on the advantage put a target on her back more than it helped her. I can 100% understand seeing that and not having it have been, she hasn't been able to really, like, play super hard because Reba haven't gone to Tribal Council, so there haven't been any moves like that.
And she didn't really have any allies.
Right. And so I can see being really tempted to want any advantage you can get in the game. And so I 100% understand why she wanted the advantage. And I even see why Kelly took it too. But doing that put another target on her back, because Austin saw them as the two people keeping him from having an idol in his pocket. So now, rather than flying under the radar, Austin's got two targets that he doesn't necessarily care if they stay or go, but he wants them to eventually go, because the sooner they go, the sooner he has another idol.
Yeah, and also he really wanted that sandwich.
He really did. Like, the amount of times I heard him say, "She kept me from my sandwich, man." I was like, okay, dude, you need to chill. Like, I know you're hungry, I get it, but, like, come on, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was really kind of miffed by this episode. I'm glad it didn't end with her leaving, but I was very nervous by the end of it because there was a lot of things that kind of came to play that made me very nervous.
Yeah.
And then we get to the merge episode, which isn't actually the merge episode. I hate that they do this now. They all are on one beach now, but they weren't technically merged until, obviously, one more person leaves, because this they've been doing this for the last couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. Jeff Probst gets a thrill out of sending one more person home, and it drives me crazy. But I am a little curious. I don't think Jay made the jury.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
But I'm not sure numbers-wise exactly how it's going to work out. If they have a final two, then that means that there will be 10 jurors. If they have a final three, which I think is what they've been doing, it's hard for me to remember, because they've done both throughout the years. If they do a final three, then there's 9 members of the jury. And because there's 3 people in the end, the numbers don't really matter if they're even or odd by then. So I don't think she's in the jury, which really breaks my heart. She got voted out, and there's a whole thing about that. But I was really, really sad to see Jay go in this episode. And it is literally in the, like, the dumbest, craziest scenario in the world.
I mean, it was kind of, it was a cool episode if you weren't rooting for Jay, which mm-hmm. we were. Like, if you were rooting for Caleb, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I like Caleb.
So do I.
At the end, he was being a little butt-faced.
Oh, yeah.
But
he was.
Aside from that, I was like, okay, this was actually a pretty interesting tribal.
Yeah, I generally like him in the game. Like, he's a really good player, and he's playing things very smart, and yeah, totally get it. I have to say that, one, I think Jay's tribe members are absolute morons. There is no such thing as too many numbers when you are merged, and there are basically two tribes going at it.
Yeah.
Right now, it's Reba versus Bello, and don't ask me the numbers because I don't remember which side has which, but neither one of them has lost a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Caleb and Emily in the middle, kind of deciding where they go. Mm-hmm. Now, Emily has recently voted and chosen the two Reba people, which would make me think that Reba, with their, I think it's 5 strong, it would have been 6 strong, with Reba's 6 strong, plus Emily and or Caleb, that would have given them the super majority over Bello. So they could have just single-handedly, all of them, voted Bello out one by one. And then when it got down to them, Reba would have had control. They could have voted out Caleb and Emily, and then Reba could have voted out its members. Like, that makes way more sense numbers-wise than sending your own home.
Yeah.
And D especially drove me nuts in this episode because she threw Jay's name out there as someone they wouldn't mind getting rid of.
Yeah.
I'm like, why?
And Jay didn't have any loyalties to anybody. She would have had to have done what they told her to do.
And she had told them that she was going to be loyal to them. Like, she was like, I don't have any other allies. I don't know anyone else. I've been on Reba the entire time with you guys. Where am I going to go? Like, yeah. There was no reason to target her. And the only reason I can think is that D was worried that Jay was going to let it slip that it wasn't her vote.
Mm.
And so that's the only reason. And that maybe it just didn't get camera time to tell us that.
That makes sense, though.
That's the only reason I can think that D volunteered.
And Austin was very mad at her.
Austin was mad at her. And Sifu just wanted her gone.
Yeah.
Because
and
of what
Julie
happened.
Just does whatever D tells her to do.
Right. So, like, I was really frustrated because this is not the smartest gameplay for them. And I understand if someone was actively working against you. But Jay absolutely was not working against them.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that initially when they get to tribal council, the plan is not to vote Jay out, it's to vote Caleb out. And I was so glad because I was like, if she gets one more week, I think she's going to have a chance to really prove herself to them. And, you know, maybe make some inroads and not be a target.
Yeah.
Plus, targets shift all the time. If you can last one more week, somebody may do or say something that puts them on the block.
Yeah.
And, you know, they become the one everyone's targeting. So I was so excited. And then Caleb plays his stupid shot in the dark, which I have only seen work one time in the 5 seasons it's been in play.
Really?
Because it's only been in play since season 41, I believe. Okay. So this is like 41, 42.
And that's literally a 50-50 chance either your votes count or they don't.
It's not even 50-50. You're picking out of a jar of like 6.
Oh.
Like there's like 6 slips of paper in the shot in the dark jar. You don't get to vote. You pull one out and there's one in there that says you're safe. So it's not even 50-50. It's like a 15% chance or something.
Wow.
Yeah. So he got so lucky.
Yeah.
And he now has the record for the number of votes nullified by an advantage.
Really?
Because it used to be 11. I believe it was Kelly Wentworth. I don't remember which season because she's played like 3 times.
Okay. I recognize that name.
I want to say she had nullified like 9 votes with her immunity idol that year.
Yeah.
This is the first time that someone has nullified 11 votes.
Wow. And everybody voted for him.
Everyone voted for him but himself.
Yeah.
And he didn't vote because he played a shot in the dark.
Right.
There's no vote in the jar for him.
Oh, Jay, you're so close.
Here is where I wanted to cry. Because I just wish that Jay had thought this through. She knew that she was... she knew she was being targeted. She heard her name at camp.
Yeah.
Why she didn't throw one vote to someone else? She would have been the sole deciding vote and would have sent that person home. And she would have been safe.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
She knew she had been targeted. She knew people were looking at her. But everyone voted for Caleb. So there had to have been a consensus where everyone was getting back and saying, Caleb, we gotta get rid of Caleb. Caleb's gotta go. If Jay had thrown one vote on someone else...
But did she know about the shot in the dark?
Well, no, but she wouldn't have had to. Even just thinking about the possible odds, if everyone votes for Caleb and he has an immunity idol, they're in the same boat.
Right,
if she would have just given it a second's thought of what happens if... everyone votes for the same person and that person doesn't go home somehow.
Yeah.
One vote by anyone other than Caleb would have been the
That's
only
really
vote
smart.
To send someone home.
I didn't even, that didn't even occur to me.
And so I was hoping beyond hope that Jay would have voted for anybody else, whether it's Emily or whomever. I would have kind of been a little sad to see Emily go because I think
she's
a good player.
She's an interesting player.
She's kind of all over the place, but honestly is learning a lot very quickly.
Yes.
And I'm loving watching her play.
Yeah.
But I wanted Jay to stay.
I know, me too.
So Jay has officially gone home and is no longer in the game. And it breaks my heart. And I picked her on my fantasy, so it ruins that's done now too, but it was a lot of fun seeing her play, and I'm really glad. It was fun to know someone who played.
Definitely.
Like, there have been people from like my hometown or really close to my hometown, and there have been people from like Ohio that I've cheered for, and you know, people I know from other things, but I've never like talked to someone who played Survivor. So it's like really cool that we had her on the podcast and we actually like had a convo and an interview. And so we were cheering you on, Jay, and I'm so sorry that you are not on the show anymore. But
I feel like she's been a good sport about it.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm just happy that even when she was leaving, you know, telling Jeff that the little kid inside of her is so happy.
I know.
It was really sweet.
It was really cute.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think it was on her Twitter. She was talking about how she stayed a couple days in a motel and there was like a song that kept playing like over and over, and it had the phrase shot in the dark in the song.
Really?
And she's like, I was going a little less. Like, it was just really funny because now
hilarious.
That phrase is going to mean something very different for her for the rest of her life.
Yep. Wonder if she'll put that in a song.
Right? It would be a good song title.
It would be.
We'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little bittersweet because Caleb stayed and, you know, I'm enjoying seeing him play, but ultimately I really wanted Jay to stick around. So... that is probably going to be the end of our Survivor Corner, Survivor part of Kristen's Corner.
Yeah.
The reason we've been covering it is because of Jay Maya.
Yeah.
So we probably won't give a lot of updates. Maybe if something really fun happens or if they bring her back for a challenge, because occasionally they'll do that. Like, they'll bring back former people just for one event or something. Or
and
maybe
she would be at the reunion, wouldn't she?
Possibly. They've been doing it live from the island the last couple years, so the only people there are the jury and the finalists. But you never know. They may switch things up or whatever, so we'll have to see how they decide to do it this time, but if Jay makes an appearance again on the show, we'll definitely talk about it.
Yeah.
But other than that, the other item on our docket for Kristen's Corner is the strikes. There's not a lot to talk about, but there is one thing I think worth noting. There is still ongoing talks. They've been doing the, like, 2 days on their own sides, talking things amongst themselves, and then they'll do a day of negotiating, and then they'll go back to their corners and talk again and kind of come back together. This has been going on for a while, but there has not been a whole lot of progress. Like, it feels like there's something going on, but there hasn't been a lot of talk about what progress has been made. Recently, there's been a lot of chatter about the studios submitting a quote-unquote final offer to SAG-AFTRA, and we don't quite know what they mean by final offer, because if it doesn't get accepted, what do we do? Close Hollywood?
Yeah.
Like, do they think this means that, like, okay, we're not making any more entertainment.
Yeah.
Everybody close your doors, because the actors aren't going back without a deal.
Right.
And they're going to continue to strike. So they can call this a final offer as much as they want, but until a deal is struck that both sides see as somewhat fair, this is going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not entirely sure what final offer means, but it does feel like they're getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of back and forth, and it sounds like there have been a few compromises here and there, but we will let you know this as soon as we know what's going on. And basically just keep an eye on the official SAG-AFTRA accounts, both on, I mean, it's all over the place on all social media. Your favorite actors and actresses are probably be talking more and more about it, because they're really trying to put the pressure on the studios and get a fair deal made. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out. I'm sure you will hear something, but you'll definitely hear from us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I'm really excited once that gets wrapped up. I hope it happens soon.
I know. I'm with you.
Which god would we have to burn an offering to? Apollo, maybe? Feel like he could be in there.
I mean, that would be fitting.
Yeah.
I don't know who the Greek god of the arts would be.
I mean, the muses would probably be
probably
pretty good.
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. Please help us.
Yes.
Okay, this week's discussion is Chalice of the Gods, chapters 9 through 11. I know we only skipped, like, a week, but I feel like it's been ages.
I know.
We were talking about reading these chapters forever, but we're finally here. I'm very excited. We're kicking this off with chapter 9, The Chickens Draw First Blood, in which the trio kidnap a baby chicken and then prepare to sing their apologies to Hebe. And this basically starts off where we left off in the last chapter, where the trio is being chased by a pack of feral chickens, and it's basically my worst nightmare.
Pretty much.
When I went home, I went to my best friend's brother's house, and they have chickens, and those things were huge. I don't know that I've ever seen chickens that large. They were gigantic, and I was just like, I do not like this. I didn't get very close, and then as we were walking away, the rooster roostered at us, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So don't put me down for being chased by a pack of feral chickens.
I was gonna say, I think Percy offers to switch places.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Annabeth, thank goodness for Annabeth.
Mm-hmm.
She's very, very smart, and she leads them to a tube in the play structure within Heebie-Jeebies, and they use a table to block it after them. He likens it to a cork being put inside a bottle, which I thought was really clever.
Mm-hmm.
And then Grover tells us some important information. I feel like this was a really good chapter for Grover. He was very helpful in it, and I feel like the spotlight was on him a bit in this chapter.
Yeah.
He basically says the hens go to Hebe's temples and the roosters go to Hercules' temples, and they only come together on Hebe's holy day. And this is because Hebe married Hercules when he became a god. I don't think I knew this.
I don't think I knew this either.
I don't remember that being a thing,
yeah.
But I mean, I believe him. Grover knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason why he knows this is because Hebe sponsored daycare centers for young satyrs. And really interesting, Percy thinks that's why satyrs age half as fast as humans.
I mean,
we actually have a potential reason for why they age half as fast.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah, that's so, so interesting. But also, I just love that Hebe sponsors the daycare centers right. for young satyrs.
It's like, okay.
So cute.
Sure.
Yeah. So, they kind of come up with a plan here, and Annabeth sends Grover out to distract the chickens, because he can speak chicken, while she and Percy grab a chick from the coop, and then they all meet at the karaoke bar. And Annabeth ends up grabbing a little chicken that Percy dubs Lil' Killer. It's a little baby chick who latches onto her finger and will not let go.
Yeah.
And they end up getting Lil' Killer, and Grover meets them back at the karaoke bar, and they close the doors, and now the three of them plus the chicken are inside. And so Annabeth goes, right, the karaoke bar is Hebe's inner sanctum, so they need to sing her a song and beg for forgiveness. That's the whole plan.
Because apparently this was a thing. If you went to Hebe's temple and begged for forgiveness, she would give you sanctuary.
Right.
And that's what Annabeth's just looking for, sanctuary here. So she's like, if we beg for forgiveness, Hebe may come forgive us and give us sanctuary in the karaoke bar and tell the hens to back off and leave
right.
us be.
Yeah.
Like, that's problem number one, is to stop being chased by killer chickens.
Yes. Yeah, that is the number one problem at this point. And because Annabeth is Annabeth, if that doesn't work, then their backup plan is plan chick, whatever that means.
I have an inkling. We may find out in the chapter I'm going to talk about in a minute.
I think we will, actually.
Which, I didn't know what plan chick was at the end of
yes.
chapter 9 either. I was a little bit curious and hadn't quite put it
yeah.
together yet.
And also, I did not guess.
Oh, I put it together. There was a specific point, and we'll get there.
Oh, okay.
There was a point where I knew what was going on, and I was like, holy crap. And that's when, like, it all came
yeah.
together. But until then, I was like, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Not at all. No plan.
What was your favorite line from this chapter?
There were kind of two, but the first one, and the more important one, I think, is from Percy, and he says, "It took me only a second to understand why she wanted it. By now, we'd had enough adventures together that I was usually only a few steps behind Annabeth's thought process, rather than a few days."
That's pretty cute.
It's so them, and I
yeah.
love these reminders that, like, this book is coming at a point where they know each other so well
mm-hmm.
and they've fought together and worked side by side for so long that it is second nature to understand where Annabeth's going with this. Like, it's just, he knows. Like, he may not know her whole plan, but he's been through enough of this that he knows when to trust her. He can kind of put enough pieces together to be helpful. Like, yeah, and I just really loved this moment. This was about the table when they were hiding in the tube.
Yeah.
Like, he very quickly put together why she wanted the table, and it was like, okay, let's do it, you know. And I love that. So, I also wanted to include Grover's line. It's when they're in the tube and they're about to go their separate ways, and Annabeth is explaining to him, like, you have to distract them, and she says something about, like, insult them or something, and and Grover's, like, hesitant because he's like, why would I do that? And she goes, because it'll cause them to attack you, and he goes, good point. I will insult the chickens.
Yeah.
And I love good point. I will insult the chickens
yeah.
so much that I can just see that line.
Yeah.
Like, I can see it on screen in my head. So I had to include it as well.
Yeah, I really love that. My favorite line is actually from Grover, and he says, technically chicken isn't a distinct language, though many animal dialects sound just like chicken. This is potentially the single funniest joke that Rick has ever written. The fact that chicken sounds like so many other languages, that is just genius on a whole different level. I love it so much.
It goes with the taste like chicken.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's great. What was your favorite moment?
It would have to be Grover insulting the chickens. Yeah. The whole bit is just right up my alley, and I loved it. And the fact that he, like, goes out and is going, like, burr, burr, you know, at certain ways, and then the chickens get incensed, and Percy's like, he must have insulted their mothers, and it's just so perfectly, you know, Percy-esque. Like, it's just, it feels so much like a Percy book that
it really does.
I loved it so much.
Classic Percy.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite moment was Annabeth being single-minded in her objective to get them out of this situation, because they're all struggling with the fact that they're being a kid right now, and they kind of have their moments of clarity where it's like, okay, you know, I remember who I am and that I'm not actually 8 years old, and my brain, you know, I'm trying to make my brain work the way that it used to. And Annabeth struggles as well, but, like, she is really, like, she is leading the pack here, and I just love seeing her like that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like they lost a lot in their mental capacity. Like, they're physically 8 years old, and, like, even emotionally, they kind of feel 8 years old, but, like, mentally, they're still their original ages, it feels like. But Annabeth is still, like, whip smart. Even, you know, like, despite her emotions kind of being all over the place because she's young and all of that, I she's just a cut above. She knows what she's doing, and we trust Annabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we are going to move now into chapter 10, entitled My Singing Makes Things Worse, and Everyone is Totally Shocked.
I love it.
It's a fantastic chapter now. Okay, so it's time for them to sing for their lives. Percy and Annabeth belt out an off-key John Lennon song to get Hebe to return and forgive them. Hebe returns, but only to beg that they stop singing. Then Plan Chick kicks into gear, and Annabeth outsmarts yet another goddess.
Oh, it's classic.
It is. It's classic, Annabeth. First of all, I had to include the little equation that was at the top of this chapter.
Yeah.
Percy's talking about if A equals B, then we're going to be okay. If A does not equal B, then we're dead. And I just love that it's like...
Why are those our two options?
I love that that's an actual little equation that is on the page. It just made my day, and I was like, this is fantastic. I have to put it in my notes so that I make sure to talk about it. Because it's just one of those things. Okay, so Annabeth and Percy run up to the karaoke stage while Grover is holding the doors closed from the hens that are trying to get through, and so they start looking for apology songs. Percy remembers one that his mom used to cry to all the time. She'd turn it on over and over again and just cry, and he didn't like that it made her cry, but he remembered the song. And it is Jealous Guy by John Lennon, which Percy refers to as that one guy, and Annabeth kind of dings him for, like, that one guy? Like, dude.
I love his disrespect for anything of the older generation.
Yeah, classic rock is lost on Percy. Like, he just does not, he doesn't get it. So they find Jealous Guy, and they start to sing. Percy tries to get Annabeth to take the lead, but she insists it has to be him, since 90% of Hebe's anger is directed towards Percy. And I love that this 90% thing is now a thing that goes on for the rest of the chapter.
Yeah.
Like, it keeps getting referenced that Percy is 90% responsible for why Hebe's mad, and I love that it just keeps going. They make it through the first verse and first chorus, and as they start the second chorus, which is also likened to the word curse, because apparently...
I felt like this was Rick talking to us.
It was, because it was... As I'm typing this, I accidentally typed curse instead of chorus, and I think that's very fitting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who's telling us this?
Yeah.
Who's writing this down? Is it Percy? Like, I assumed it was supposed to be Percy, but it was a nice, cute little aside.
Yeah.
But as they start the second chorus, Hebe appears in a cloud of glitter and prize tickets to stop the madness.
That's just a great visual. Like, I could just see that happening.
Right? Just they poof out of nowhere and just start fluttering to the ground as Hebe appears. Like, it's very, very visual. I love it. So Annabeth and Percy beg for her forgiveness, for sanctuary from her hens, and to be returned to their proper ages. And Hebe is insulted by this, especially the being returned to their proper ages, because youth is a gift.
Right.
Percy also keeps pushing for more info about the chalice, which every time he does, Annabeth gives him an elbow in the gut. And I don't blame her, because they have a lot of things they need from Hebe in this moment, and the least important right now is info about the chalice.
Right, that's true.
Annabeth keeps glancing at Lil Killer, who is, like, under the tables eating French fries and things that have been left behind.
Moldy pizza.
Yeah. Ew. And Annabeth kind of keeps glancing at her, and Percy sees this and is like, I don't know what you're planning, but yep, it's still there. Like, the chick's still there. What are we doing? At this point, we start to notice that Hebe is shrinking in size. First, it's her beehive hairdo starts to get shorter. And soon after that, her stature starts to get shorter and shorter. And then pretty soon, she's racing backwards in her youth, finally ending as a cranky newborn with a bright red face. You see, Hebe has to be the youngest in the room. So plan chick was to give her someone very young to compete with so that then they would have leverage to get Hebe to turn them back to their rightful ages. The chick is only a couple of days old. So Hebe then had to become a newborn in order to compete with the chick. Annabeth is a friggin' genius.
Yeah.
It was the moment that Hebe was wearing her boots and they were more like waders than boots.
Yeah.
That was the moment where I figured it all out. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, Annabeth, you're so smart.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, thank God you're here.
But it was right when it was happening, basically. Yeah. Like, I had no idea what her plan was until it was already happening. And
yeah,
it was so smart.
She's so smart. Yeah. So smart. Annabeth says to Hebe, something very similar to, see, youth is not always a blessing. There are some ages that are more difficult, and I would like us to be turned back to our rightful ages. And then she asks Hebe to gurgle once for yes and poop for no. And Percy says something to the effect of, like, I've never wanted to hear a gurgle so much in my life, which is just funny. Hebe gurgles. It's apparently not a distinctive gurgle, but it's a gurgle nonetheless. And very pretty quickly, they go back to their appropriate ages. Little Killer squeezes through a beak hole in the door, which allows Hebe to start aging back. And the hens disperse, and all is well. And that is how we leave this chapter. Hebe's about to tell them more things, too. But the biggest point is that our heroes are back to their original ages.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your favorite line?
When Percy said, I am 90% of the sorry.
It is a Percy classic.
Yeah.
And as I said, this whole 90% thing just got me, and it kept popping back up, and Percy kept using it, and I was like, yep, yeah, it's glorious.
It's so funny, because he didn't want to admit that he was 90% of the reason why she was mad to begin with, but, like, when it comes down to it, he's like, I'm 90% of the sorry.
It's so good. Mine was, Lil' Killer pulled geniority on Hebe, and I just thought this was so clever, such clever wordplay, and I love that kind of stuff, so I had to put it in there. Okay, and then your favorite moment?
Basically all of Plan Chick, because it was just so clever.
It really was.
Yeah.
Mine is basically a part of that, too. It's Annabeth noting to Hebe that being the youngest isn't always the best. Like, they had to get enough leverage on Hebe in order to get her to turn them back, and the only thing she could think of is making her so young she's basically powerless, and that is exactly what worked. And yeah, it was a very, very wise and witty way to get their way, and I was very, very proud of her.
Yeah. And now we're getting into chapter 11. We win 0 prize tickets. And basically, in this chapter, it's 2 parts. The first part is that Hebe tells them where to find Iris. And then the second part is Percy having a nice little chat with his mom. It's pretty cute.
Yeah.
So, at the beginning of the chapter, Hebe returns them to their former selves and gives them more pizza, which I thought was, you know, very hospitable of her.
Mm-hmm.
She also tells them to go to the farmer's market to see Iris, the other goddess who used to be a cupbearer. So she's basically like, it's not me, I didn't steal the chalice, but Iris is the only other person who used to be the cupbearer, so, like, maybe go talk to her.
And newsflash, she doesn't like Ganymede that much.
Yeah.
So it fits.
Yeah. And she basically lets them go with 0 prize tickets and says she won't tell anyone about the chalice being stolen because she can't wait to see what happens to Ganymede. She wants to see him get blown to dust by Zeus, basically.
Yeah, so visual. Yes.
Yeah. I thought this, at the end of this part of the chapter, was really funny, too, because Percy's so relieved over another local quest. Like, he's been all over the world at this point, and just to, you know, have to go down the street somewhere, or, like, stay in New York City to complete this quest, he's so relieved. And I'm like, yeah, like, I understand that. He doesn't want to miss school, or, you know, he wants the rest of his weekend to be safe and all of that. It was really funny.
Yeah, he talks about, like, being able to go to school. Like, I can actually get all of that done because they can't go to the farmer's market until Saturday, and that's the next step in this journey. So he can actually focus on school for a week and not have to worry. And, yeah, I thought it was a very cute way to kind of say, yeah, Percy's staying in New York. And the bit where they all go separate ways on the subway actually made me really kind of sad.
Really?
Like, I know it was just, like, practical. Like, Percy's going back to his area of Manhattan. Annabeth's going to hers. Grover's heading back toward camp. But, like, I was kind of like, okay, it's time for them all to go home.
Yeah.
And they'll meet up again to do the next part. But, like, it made me a little sad. It was like, they didn't even, like, have a moment or anything. They just kind of went their separate ways.
I really like it, too. I mean, it is sad, but I also like it because it's so, like, domestic. It's so normal. It's this slice of life story where we actually see them going back home and, like, we find out whether or not he has a good night's sleep and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's very much, this is a peek into his normal everyday life, which normally we only look in on him when the world's about to end.
It's
so
true.
It's a very different kind of story, and I really enjoy that. I also really, I mean, enjoy is not the right word, but Percy reflects quite a lot on being turned into a kid, and he seems kind of traumatized by it, and I feel like that's something in the past that he would have, like, made a joke about and then moved on. But he actually, like, needs a moment to be like, okay, I was just 8 years old today. Like, that kind of bothers me. I don't like having, you know, remembering what it was like to be eight. I'm glad that I am who I am again.
He also seems especially kind of annoyed with the whole Riptide of it all, too.
Yes.
Like, the fact that his trusted partner that's always been there when he needs Riptide would not become Riptide for him because he was 8 years old. Like, that really bothers him a lot. And he doesn't really come out and talk about it all that much, but he just keeps referencing, like, the safety cap and, like, all that stuff. And you can tell that it really bothers him to have been that, like, he didn't have anything to use.
He was powerless.
Yeah, he really was. Like, in that moment, he didn't have control over himself or anything, and he didn't even have the weapon he's always counted on. And, it definitely
scarred
him a little.
And really, like, I mean, Riptide kicked off his demigod journey, and it saved his life so many times that, like, not being able to rely on Riptide had to have been very strange for him.
Absolutely.
The second part of this chapter shows Percy at home. He's out on the fire escape, and his mom joins him out there, kind of notices that he's looking a little sad. And right at the top of this part, Percy's worried about his mom getting older, and he kind of goes to, like, help her through the window, and she's like, no, you know, I don't need any help. And she sits down next to him, and he comments on all of her gray hair and stuff like that. And I just thought, again, we have this very, like, wistful, introspective version of Percy in this book.
And he likens, like, the gray in his hair and how he went gray first.
Yeah.
But that she has this gray that makes her look more distinguished. Like, he's like, it doesn't make her look old. It just makes, you know, it makes her look different. And she's his mom. So I can definitely see why, you know, you see the gray, but it's still mom. So yes, she's older, and that is definitely scarring to him. But I like that he seems to have just kind of taken the gray as her being wiser and, you know, a little older, but not necessarily, like, a
bad
thing.
I wonder if she's like my mom, who has gray eyelashes sometimes. I've seen her have a gray eyelash, and I'm like, what is that? And she's like, don't look at it.
Don't look at it.
Yeah. So one of the first things Percy asks his mom is what he was like when he was just a little kid. And she's kind of like, why are you asking me about that? And he ends up telling her about his day at Heebie Jeebies. And like always, she kind of takes everything in stride, which is very Sally Jackson. We've talked about that on the podcast a few times. She's always been, you know, a great mom, but also very supportive of the fact that he's a demigod and, like, these things are going to happen. And so she's just like, wow, that's a lot. And then kind of, you know, moves on with it. But she says that he used to get scared and then back away from whatever was scaring him, but he'd always go back up to whatever it was until it retreated or he understood it. And I feel like that's such an interesting insight into what Percy was like as a kid, because we've known him since he was 12, but there was a lot of time before that that we got references to about him getting kicked out of school and the trouble he might have gotten in and just being around, you know, Gabe and all that other kind of stuff. But we've never gotten, like, a ton of details, and I feel like this just tells you so much about what Percy Jackson is like as a person.
Yeah, like, this had nothing to do with, you know, him being a demigod. This is way before he knew about any of that, and it's just part of his nature that he, you know, he gets scared. Big things, little things, whatever, he gets scared, and he's not immune to that feeling, but he also has this innate ability to say, the fear is not that important. I need to take care of this. I need to, you know, whether it's standing up to somebody or understanding something or learning something new, like, he gets scared, but he steps forward and takes it on after that. Mm-hmm. And it's very fitting to learn that this is kind of how Percy has always been deep down. Like, it's not just a demigod quality. It's not just because he knows that he has monsters to fight and, you know, quests to be successful at and things to work on. And it's just who he is. It's him deep down in his soul.
Yeah, I love that. And he slept really well that night. I thought that was really cute.
It is really sweet.
I just, again, he's just so wistful and introspective in this chapter. This is the kind of chapter that shows Mark's influence on Rick, and I find it so obvious now that we've read The Sun and the Star that it's just, it screams out to me. And I think Rick has, honestly, I mean, he's always been a fantastic writer, but he's added a new element to his writing after having worked with Mark, and I think that it's really working for me. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying this side of Percy a lot.
I agree. It's nice to see, to have these moments with Percy, too. We love the quests, and we love the craziness and the snarkiness and all of that, but these quiet, wistful moments where we really get to know what's going on in Percy's head and what's going on in his heart, and we hear him talking to his mom and taking a moment out of his day to just be, you know, kind of still be a little young and ask his mom, you know, for advice or help or whatever. I'm with you. I really, really love these. And I think it's just a new aspect of Percy that we haven't really had before. And I like that that's something Rick's kind of taken on after having written with, alongside Mark, now has kind of adopted it to his own style.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So what was your favorite line from this chapter?
It's one of the last lines between Percy and Hebe right at the end of that section. And Percy says, I've met Iris. She didn't seem spiteful. Hebe says, and I do. And then Percy says, I kept my mouth shut. Sometimes I can learn.
Yeah.
It's so perfect.
Yeah.
Because he's gotten himself in trouble and Annabeth's been elbowing him every 5 minutes because he's not keeping his mouth shut. And here he learns, maybe not responding is the way to go. And yeah, I love it.
My favorite line was a very insightful one. I think it was when he was being very introspective and he's kind of out on that fire escape and he's looking around at the other apartment buildings that he can see and the people inside. And he goes, I love New York because you can see all those lives side by side, like an endless patchwork of different video game screens, inviting you to hit play and slip into a new reality. I wondered if anyone had ever thought about slipping into my life. Yes, Percy, millions of people have. And it was that, like, slight, like, I don't know that you would call that fourth wall breaking or, like, lampshading kind of, but it's just that, like, kind of awareness to the story where, like, that's Rick talking to us there. And that those kind of lines just really mean a lot to me. And I just love the idea that Percy's like, I wonder if anyone you know, cares about what's going on with me. And I just want to go, yes, they do. Millions of people do.
We all do.
Yeah.
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 What was your favorite moment?
It was Percy having a chat with his mom about everything that happened and her telling him about how he's always been a brave kid, even if he was scared first. Like, he always stepped forward and took on whatever was in front of him. And I thought that was a really sweet moment between the two of them. And that whole chat, again, it's just a new side of Percy. We didn't used to get very many of these. So I really do love that this has kind of become a more common thing.
Yeah, my favorite moment was also Percy and his mom, and it was basically him worrying about her, which I know is like a weird thing to say, but I just felt like he was being such a good son in that moment. He was trying to take care of her. He ended up doing the dishes, and, you know, it was just really cute.
I wonder if like doing the dishes is easier for him.
Ooh.
Like, he can control the water, so can he just kind of be like, whoosh, and like...
Does he not have to get his hands wet? Well, he wouldn't get his hands wet, really.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Could he, like, play video games and have the dishes wash themselves?
All good questions.
I know. Now I need to know the answers to this.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is so very helpful. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for content, or episodes you want to hear from us in any of these places. We love hearing from you guys. We've always include feedback when we have it. I appreciate everyone liking my quote graphics on Instagram because it makes me very happy. I'm not a graphic designer, but I love making them, so I really appreciate you guys liking them and enjoying them. So
yes, and special shout out to PercyJackson_forLife on Instagram, who won our giveaway.
Oh yeah!
And got everything safely in the mail, and that made me so happy. So thank you everybody for entering, and thank you PercyJackson4Life for being a great fan.
We appreciate you guys so very much. Okay, so next week we will be tackling Chalice of the Gods chapters 12 through 14 and the latest news, which will hopefully include a SAG-AFTRA deal and very, very good news so that we can start talking about other things. But until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.